The advisory board is constituted as an oligarchical body dominating through the same persons, both private cartels and official trade organizations, under the officially sanctioned leadership of one of the industrial lords, who is primus inter pares so far as the monopolists are concerned, and who is leader so far as the plebeian rest is concerned. The professional bureaucratic personnel administers the law for the whole group. Consequently, this personnel has the task of adjusting the various interests within the group, either as the agency of last resort or, as is increasingly the case, as a kind of preliminary sifting organ whose reports provide the raw material for the official decisions of the Reich Ministry of Economic Affairs. It represents, so to speak, the group interest as against the interest of the individual concern. Also, this function served to strengthen the independence of the group bureaucracy as against individual concerns. This process did not go very far. The constitutional framework governing the organization of the group makes the group administration partial to the big interests within its jurisdiction, no less than did its forerunner under the Weimar Republic. Every big concern has its own specialists who zealously and competently watch the work of the representative of the group. Significantly enough, the democratic element, a remnant of earlier estate ideas, footnote 43, text, which would have required a vote of confidence from all members, not only from the advisory board, was already removed from the statute book by executive orders in 1935. Footnote 44, text, and the relations between leadership and the small and medium-sized producer have been adapted to the German reality. The status of the smaller producers has been changed from that of active participants into that of objects of propaganda. The war has not altered any part of this organizational structure. On the contrary, the building of a district economic board has only established these characteristics the more firmly. At the same time, when the provincial and regional state bureaucracy was given supervisory power over the distribution of consumers' goods for the whole population, the president of the regional organizations of trade and industry of the Chamber of Industry and Commerce saw themselves raised to the rank of Reich commissioners, with the duty of seeing to it that the task of production were carried through. Footnote 45, text, page 63. And when the most recent legislation tried to reduce war profits, it likewise, to a large extent, placed the power to determine what it is to be considered appropriate profit in the hands of the groups whose members were the very ones to make the profit. To a large measure, the governing ranks of the chambers of industry and the economic groups are the ones that, either directly or by the weight of the advice which their expert set before the state bureaucracy, decide on the chances of making profits from any given means of production. This method of determining the use to which a given means of production will be put has become the rule rather than the exception. Many owners have been totally or partially deprived of the possibility of making use of their machinery. The measures by which these expropriations have been carried through have a dual aspect. In most of the cases covered by the government's authority, quota restrictions and other measures have been actually carried through by the career group officials who have been vested with public authority. The profit of such operations accruing to certain members of the group. In the case of Jewish expropriation, the question of indemnity for the damaged person does not arise. Footnote 46, text. In the other cases, inference with private property invariably raises the question of indemnity. Under the Weimar Republic, the courts had had jurisdiction over expropriation claims, gave a very extensive interpretation to the concept of expropriation by public authorities. It was to be expected under fascism that such an interpretation, as well as the insistence on full compensations, would be upheld by the courts in all cases where the physical property was left intact, but there is profitable use was excluded in consequence of a governmental authorization or decree. The government therefore decided to throw the traditional procedures overboard. The differences arising from the transformation of the apparatus of production were to be treated as a pure intra-group concern, and there was to be no appeal to an outside authority. So we can see that the tendency already mentioned as characteristic of mass democracy, the absorption of the individual rights in group rights, reaches its extreme form. This tendency was already visible in the cartel legislation of 1933, which prevented the cartel tribunal from interfering in disputes arising between members and the cartel. The principle of refusing to grant access to regular courts was also soon employed in numerous decrees, especially in those concerning the food estate, agriculture. These rules that the parties have to content themselves with the decision of an intra-group arbitration court, or as far as questions of quotas are concerned, with committees of complaint provided for by their respective organizations. Footnote 47, text. Page 64. The same state of affairs have prevailed in regard to compensation granted in the case of compulsory shutdown of plants for the duration of the war. Here too, the economic groups have sole jurisdiction in deciding whether and what indemnity should be given, and appeal is possible only to the Reich Economic Chamber. The coordination body of these organizations, the remarkable feature of this legislation is, first, the abandonment of the principle accepting throughout the liberal era and still acknowledged by the regular courts in Germany, that the individual should not suffer any loss through the acts of expropriation, that he should receive either a full or at least an appropriate indemnity. Footnote 48, text. If an indemnity is granted, it is granted by equity and not by law, and to say, as does the official language, that the vital necessities of the whole region have to be considered before the interests of the individual, is only another way of justifying the redistribution of the property. Footnote 49, text. But even more important than the decree of indemnification granted on account of the loss of professional and economic status is the fact that these rules deny access to the courts and, by doing so, close the iron ring which the new economic constitution of the monopolistic society places around the less favored member of the business or trade group. They are prevented from combining with other social groups or airing before a public forum their grievances against the monopolistic domination of the group. The increasing factual subservience to the command of a monopoly-dominated group has now become a legalized subservience. Industry and agriculture are not the only realms in which the dominant forces of the group have seized the right of decision in intra-group controversies, even where these controversies only thinly veil the life struggle of marginal firms against monopolies. The same process is to be found elsewhere in the German political structure. One might almost determine the status of the different groups in Germany by the degree to which they have attained the privilegium de non appellando, to adapt a well-known concept from German constitutional history. That is to say, one might determine their status by the extent to which they have succeeded in depriving the individual member of the group of the possibility of appealing to external bodies against group decisions. This privilegium de non appellando exists in its most concentrated form in the army. The army command is made absolute master over every individual in its service by virtue of denying any separation between the personal and the professional status of its member. Page 65. Business does not need to strive for such a position. It is satisfied to control the social and economic functions of its members. As regards members of the state bureaucracy and of the party and its affiliated organizations, we have to differentiate between the direction of public affairs and the task of controlling the population. Insofar as this first function is concerned, no judicial interference is allowed. The ever-expanding lists of activities which, by legislative order, are excluded from any judicial examination make the discussion of whether a judiciary may itself decide which acts are to be included in the category of political acts and therefore to be exempt from examination a mere theoretical squabble. Footnote 50, text. The judiciary has thus been degraded from the rank of an arbiter of intergroup conflicts to that of an assistant, footnote 51, text, of the administration. The judiciary competes with the various administrative services, footnote 52, text, as an organ to enforce discipline in the lower ranks of the bureaucracy, in the party and among the population at large. The tailorized methods adopted especially in the administration of criminal law, largely through granting the public prosecutor a dominant position over the procedure and allowing a quick and satisfying disposal of a maximum of case unhampered by procedural quirks, footnote 53, text, have torn away the sanctity of the judiciary, footnote 54, text, and have deprived the government of the moral and propagandistic value inherent in the services of the judiciary. It becomes less important as a problem whether the regular judiciary or a service bureaucracy is chosen to carry out these functions, and the field is left open for minor rivalries. However, even here, the observed tendency to acquire, as far as possible, the privilegium de non appellando is always noticeable throughout the administrative services of party and state bureaucracy. Within the constitutional framework of the Weimar Republic, it became the function of the bureaucracy continually to keep under scrutiny the relationship between big business and labor, but also to preserve the status quo of agriculture and small-scale business. The cohesive element which united the bureaucracy was the preservation of its social status against encroachments from the outside and whenever feasible, the desire to extend its activities. The ideological emphasis on its impartial services to the nation as a whole hid the fact that, as far as the object of its policies was concerned, the unity was more apparent than real. The controversies between the social groups reappeared in somewhat mitigated form, free of propagandistic tinge, in the relationship between the various divisions of the public services. When we try to assess the impact of the changes in the political power structures on the bureaucracy and on its relationship to the National Socialist Party, we realize that the unity of the bureaucracy was shaken still more. Page 66. In part, it lost its identity through its steady permeation by and association with the party machine, and in part, its general negative attitude to outside control lost its raison d'être in the new and much less controlled setup. Footnote 55. Text. Thus, we are confronted with the strange picture of an intense centralization within each administrative unit going hand in hand with certain tendencies to departmentalization. Each of the highest sub-leaders jealously guards against the laws of status by being subjected to anybody's command but the Führer's. As in older system, that counts is the individual proximity to the supposed fountain of the charisma itself. Not